I'm Rachel Goldfarb, me Mutter Quill. I was born in Dokshice, Poland on December 2nd, 1930. I had a brother who was younger than myself. My father's name was Dove Mutter Quill. And my mother's maiden name was Dina Minde. Right now, I am the only survivor in my family. My mother is alive. I guess I'm not the only one. Mm-hmm. But my brother is not. My father also was killed by the Germans. My parents, my younger brother and I, lived in a small town on the border of Russia, was the very eastern part of Poland. Our community was a quite Jewish one. There was a great feeling of Jewishness within the community. We had a private Hebrew school, which I attended. It was called the Tarbut. It was already a modern Hebrew school. And we were taught the modern Hebrew much rather than the old pronunciation of the Hebrew, the Ashkenazi Hebrew. There were five synagogues all circled around a courtyard, but we did not have a ghetto-type community where all the Jews lived in one area. They were scattered throughout the town. My parents were in business, both my mother and father. My mother had a yard goods store, and my father was engaged in some export business. He also delivered meat to a Polish army garrison, which was stationed on the border some 4 miles away. Was a happy community. Most of the people were on quite good terms with the Gentiles in the neighborhoods or outside of the town, in the nearby villages. I really did not feel persecuted in any way. Family was quite well off. Maybe that had something to do with it. But we had quite a number of associations with non-Jews, and I did not feel any particular discrimination, I could call it. Mm-hmm. We used to go over some of the Gentile friends' homes, and I remember we had occasionally some of the Gentiles come to our home to visit. As a matter of fact, our recall very clearly that the priest in the town was a good friend, and also one of the Greek Orthodox clergymen, I think he was called a deacon, used to come to our house before Pesach, and if I can remember correctly, he even stayed to a Seder once. It wasn't until about 1938, I think, that there was much more of a feeling of anti-Semitism. Most of the time we felt it during Christmas and Easter, when the Christian community sort of withdrew to itself. They were busy with their holidays. I know I was in church several times, even though my parents objected to it, but I had a play. Me there. Mm-hmm. Later on, it paid off because I knew quite a few of the customs and could easily pass as a non-Jewess while in hiding. So perhaps it was all for the better. The community lived a very much, very traditional type of life. The synagogues being around the courtyard, holiday time was one of the happiest places around. And wherever there are three Jews, there are four synagogues. We had five synagogues around the courtyard. So it was a rather good-sized community, Jewish community. We celebrated, of course, all the holidays, and it was a very strong feeling of Shabbat in the house. Friday noon, I think, we started to feel it. Mm-hmm. On Shabbat, we would visit a great deal, especially the grandparents. The men normally went to the synagogue. The women, I guess by choice, the older women mostly, would go to the synagogue. We children used to love to visit our grandparents and our parents, of course. After synagogue, we had the big meal of the day, and the afternoon was spent in a leisurely fashion. It was a great deal of socializing, visiting, seeing the family, I guess mostly due to the fact that people were busy during the week. Oh, some of the men went for study periods to the synagogue, but for us children it was a time of play and visiting. The general feeling in the community was, I think, a very relaxed one, happy with each other, with the surroundings, and we weren't bothered very much by the outside world, or at least we children weren't. But there were stories of atrocities in other places. I know my parents talked about pogroms in some places. To us children, as long as we weren't touched, it didn't matter. It's just a story about somewhere else. I've never experienced a pogrom, never experienced any particular abuse from any Gentiles, but then we were protected by our parents. Certain times of the year, before and after Christmas, and around Easter time, were probably kept away from those places. I know many times I was told not to go here or there at that particular time of the year. But since the Jews did not live in a segregated area, I would walk across town practically, but then it wasn't a big town, to some friends' houses. There was no transportation other than bikes, bicycles. So most of the visiting was done by walking from house to house or to whatever house we had to go to. I know that we lived approximately a mile away from my grandparents, which was a long walk. My grandparents lived at the outskirts of town. We lived in the center of town. Our house was a good-sized house. My mother's store was right in front, and my father had an office also in the front of the house. It had large courtyard, which was closed off by a very large gate. As a matter of fact, I think the only way I can describe it is like some of the Spanish villas that some of you people have seen around. Mm-hmm. There was plenty of room. We had our own bedrooms, quite comfortable. Later on, those gates were quite a protection from the outside world, I guess. Oh, I think about 1938, excuse me, we started to hear more and more stories infiltrating from the outlying areas, from Poland, of anti-Semitism, of Jewish oppression. And I remember my father having come from a trip to Częstochowa, I think it was, and told of atrocities in Germany, the fact that people are being loaded into boxcars and transported people had to leave their homes. But it was very difficult to comprehend. I know my grandfather told the stories that when the Germans occupied our town during the First World War, they were very kind to the Jews, and that he had made a number of friends amongst them. So it's very difficult to understand that people can turn around their ideas so much. And then in 1939, we were blessed with the Russians. I think many of the people who lived through the First World War thought that that was the worst of the two evils, the Russians having come in. We were immediately made to feel that anyone who had any kind of possessions was a bourgeois, and he wasn't entitled to the goodness, I guess, of the Russians. I know we were labeled bourgeois and dispossessed of much of our house, many of our possessions taken. As a matter of fact, the thing that stands out in my mind is my brother was sick and he had a thermometer in his mouth when some Russians came into the house. And they stripped whatever they could find and even took the thermometer out of his mouth. At that point, we thought this is about the worst that can happen to us. But the Russians, it turned out, weren't quite as bad as we had thought they were. The Russians had taken many people away to Siberia, and we had expected to be taken to Siberia too. As a matter of fact, there wasn't a night that we went to sleep without first packing some belongings and being ready, because when they came, they didn't give you a chance to pack whatever you could grab. All they did is allow you to get dressed, and sometimes not even properly. And then we heard on the radio the fact that Russia was at war with Germany, and that the Germans were approaching very quickly. Even though we should have really known better, because there were some refugees from central Poland that have come to our community that had run away from the Germans and told stories of how the Germans had treated the Jews in central Poland. We should have known better. We should have run with the Russians, but the Russians seemed to be so bad because they stripped us of our material things that we couldn't comprehend that anyone could be worse than that, that the Germans would strip us of our lives. Even though some of the Jews that have come from central Poland returned, they didn't find it quite so pleasant under the Russians either. And perhaps this is why I've always felt that the best cure for communists is to send them to Russia, let them have a taste of it. But the Germans did come in, and they were met with joy by quite a number of people. They came in throwing candy to the children, and with a, I don't know, came in with big regalia, I guess. But it didn't dawn on us that these people who came in with such a, bringing such a happy feeling at that moment, could turn to be so bad. From the beginning, really, we didn't feel too much as far as the Germans are concerned, as far as killings and things like that. Took them a while to get settled. But as time went on, we felt it more and more. I really have no concept of how much time or what. All I know is that I couldn't go to school anymore, even though I did not attend Tarbut or the Hebrew school. After the Russians came in, they disbanded. We attended a public school and they were religious classes. The Jews went to their religious class, and the non-Jews to theirs. The children of the Russian officials were excused completely. And perhaps that's when I started to feel anti-Semitism the most, because after those sessions in religion, the Gentile kids would come out accusing us of having killed their Christ. But there were also the children from Russia who did not attend religious classes, and it was very easy to hide, I guess, behind their backs and help them make a little bit of fun of both religions. But this is when we felt it most. When the Germans came in, after a while, the Jewish children just stopped going to school. I don't recall the exact circumstances. It was summertime, and school started in the fall. We were sort of like finishing school. And then when it was time to start again, we just didn't go. It seemed like a little while later, Jews were restricted to certain areas. We had the first sign of things worsening was the fact that we had to wear a yellow patch, yellow armband. And when a German soldier was approaching, we had to step off the sidewalk. Next thing we knew was we were restricted more in the areas we could travel and go in. Jewish people that lived on the outskirts of town had to move closer in. And then, of course, there was the ghetto. Our house was within the confines of the ghetto because we lived not too far from the synagogue courtyard, the Schulhof, as it was called. And it seemed like our street, even though it was about two blocks away from the synagogue, most of the homes had big gates, and I guess that suited the Germans just fine. So they used that as the dividing line. The ghetto at first, to a child, I guess, in a child's eyes, was kind of fun. Everybody was close by. Mm-hmm. All the relatives were there. But it wasn't long before even children felt the pressure of it all. Food became more scarce. People had to go out to work. And in a little bit of time, the Germans started to have their countdowns. Countouts, I don't know what to call them. They would bring everybody out to the courtyard, count how many souls they had. Men had to report in the morning. They were taken out on working assignments. Sometimes they took women on working assignments too. As time went on, we started to realize that some people did not return back from their working assignments. Everything was talked about in hushed up voices, I guess, to protect the children. But when my own father did not return, it became obvious what had happened. A German was displeased with a person, or with the type of work he was doing, or with how he was doing the job, just raise his gun and shoot him. After my father was shot, I guess like the whole world fell apart. And I know that my mother started to make some sort of plans to try to get out of the ghetto. My grandfather tried to hold her back. He was afraid for her to go out in the outside world. When the Russians had come in, some of the possessions were taken to some Gentile friends in the country, sort of for safekeeping. So my mother counted on that. And I remember that one of these friends had brought some of the jewelry she had stashed with them remember very well because it was stashed in a ball of yarn wound around the jewelry. Brought it back about 2 weeks before the ghetto was to be cleaned out, made Judenrein. We never managed to get out of the ghetto before that. In our house, we had a hiding place, and when the Germans started to come around dragging the people out, we went to our hiding place. I guess I should mention that all those rumors came around. And a cousin of mine used to work as a telephone operator for the Germans. She caught bits of conversation. She had warned us against it. As a matter of fact, she was a young lady, and perhaps in the favor of some German, I really don't know. She was asked to work overtime at night. As a matter of fact, one of my cousins is alive now because the Germans had kept them working and then later on told them to go. And this particular girl went to a Gentile friend's home and was hidden. She's now in Israel. But this other cousin that brought us the bits of information had perished. I guess she could not find a place to hide. We hid for 8 days, and when it got a little quiet, we started to get out, only to find that everybody has been cleared away. We made our way at night. There were still dead bodies lying around. I remember at first trying to walk around them. But as our flight became more intense, I wouldn't be at all surprised if we ran right over them. One edge of the ghetto was at a stream. There were some guards. They caught us. My mother had her jewelry in her pocket. She took it out. I guess the glistening of the jewels caught the guard's attention so much that he put down the gun and put out both his hands to receive them all. My mother filled his hands, and then we ran. I guess he was just too greedy to drop the jewels and try to shoot us. He was more anxious to hide it from the next sentry down the road. We made our way to one village. We hid in the brush. My mother went to visit with some friends to see if she could find a place for us to hide. One of the families received my brother. They thought they would hide him. She went with me to the next house. Another friend, but that friend advised us to run and run fast. As we were sitting there, we heard a knock on the door, and some neighbor came to tell her the good news that a Jewish child was found in the village. Of course, we knew who it was. It was my brother. We ran. We walked by night, hid during the day. We had a little food now. We spent 8 days with very little food in the ghetto. I think we're probably swollen with hunger and thirst. It took us about 2 days to reach the house of my brother's nurse. She hid us and went into town to try to find out what happened to my brother. She brought back the news that he had been killed. She told us it was no place for us to be. They would come looking there. They knew we were good friends of hers, and that she was a good friend of ours. And the fact that she had gone into town inquiring for my brother made it very dangerous. We headed for the road again. The corn was high. Not corn, really. We called it corn. It's wheat. It was easy to get lost in there, making our way again by night. went to the home of another friend. She was out. A young daughter of hers was home. A girl a few years older than I, but nevertheless I used to play with her. This particular family had been very good friends of ours, of my parents, I should say. Her father was a Frenchman. He had married this Polish woman and came and settled there. All the girl knew was that we were friends and she wanted to help. She hid us until her mother came home. And as her mother walked in, another neighbor came in. And we heard the neighbor gloating over the wonders the Germans did with the Jews. They killed them all. And of all the goods that there was around for the picking of those who wanted to go in to the ghetto and raid the houses, this particular family really were wonderful to us. This particular woman gave my mother her papers and to me her daughter's papers and sent her son along with us in a wagon, pretending to go to market to take us to the next town where there were still some Jews. We made our way up there. We were stopped by Germans on the road. However, since our papers were in order and there were no pictures with the papers, we easily passed. We made it to the ghetto in Głębokie. It was a much larger city, and I guess the Germans had need for workers, free slave labor. In that ghetto, we found the same problems in daily life as we did in our own town. We knew some people there, my mother did. And we found that the same thing was happening in this particular ghetto. Every so often the Germans would call everyone out, remove the older people who could not work, some children that were simply taken to a mass grave and shut. Those that were able to produce, they kept on. Having gone through it once, there was no question what was left for us to do. And my mother became active with a group that was looking to escape. The type of business my mother was in, she had a large acquaintance of Gentiles from the surrounding communities. They came to buy their yard goods for clothing. Also, my father had great contact with the Gentiles because he used to buy beef and pork for shipment to Germany, and also apples, apple orchards that he used to rent for the collection of the crop for shipping. My mother started to make contact with some of the people that she knew were a little more sympathetic and that perhaps at one time had been done favors for, and asked them for a favor now in return. The group was organized to try to leave the ghetto at night. However, it was caught. The group was caught. Somehow we couldn't make it that night. And my mother decided that it is better to try to just slip out by ourselves. Cousin was a photographer and had an apartment in the city. He worked for the Germans doing their portraits and any other type of photography work. He slipped out one evening and made arrangements for us. I was to be taken out first. My mother was going to try to escape from work. She had been taken to work at a railroad station. A Gentile young lady met me and took me with her. She took me to her own village and hid me outside the village in the fields. That evening, my mother joined me. I don't know the particulars how she got my mother away. We dressed as the Gentiles did and pretended to be carrying baskets of food to the market and made our way to another village. There was an underground in operation, and quite a number of Jewish men that had escaped from the ghetto had joined with some Russians that had been prisoners of war and managed to escape. By the way, the Russian prisoners of war were treated just horribly. They were led in big bands without any food, without any clothing. And if anyone offered them some food and they reached for it, they would be shot on the spot. Those that managed to get away hid in the forests. Our area is known for its forests and also marshes. With the accumulation of a sizable group, they had organized what we call the partisans. Contact was made with the Russians, and some Russians were parachuted into the area to help organize the group. Some of the rifles they got by attacking Germans, some of them were parachuted from Russia. Those groups joined, and there were quite a number of them in the area. We managed to join one of those groups and stayed with them. Every so often, the Germans would try to run a blockade, catch as many as they could. The Russians were quite interested in these groups and supplied them rather well. And after a while, some small planes even managed to land and bring supplies, bring in people, take some people out. I became sick with typhoid fever, and I was taken deep into the woods to a hospital. It was quite an ordeal, but one of the nurses, head nurses, was a Jewish girl, and she helped me along quite a bit. When I became well again, we had an opportunity to be taken out to Russia. It was a great break. At that point, they were so well organized that they tried to get out the children and some of the women. However, we were stranded at the airstrip because the Russians were running a blockade. Blockade was very bad. We were caught by the Germans. And it was so much worse for me because I had my head shaven when I had the typhoid fever and looked more like a boy than a girl and would have been separated from my mother. We were taken with a number of the Gentiles, farmers from that area, into our hometown. All the people in that area were of suspect. to aiding the Russians and aiding the partisans. We passed ourselves off as some of the inhabitants. And since none of those people really knew who we were, they were in the same shoes as we were able to get through it. When we were brought into our hometown, it was very bad for my mother. She was even afraid to go out to get her daily portion of food, which consisted of a piece of bread and a bowl of soup. She was afraid of being recognized. I became the hero. I would go out, beg. Whatever other children did, that's what I did. I just followed along. They went to church, so did I. They played in the street, so did I. And one day, we went begging for potatoes from the priest of the Greek Orthodox Church. He recognized me. He gave me the food, looked me over. I knew I was in trouble, or at least I thought I was in trouble. Then all the children started to kneel to receive the blessing from the priest. A moment's hesitation, and I felt the priest's hand on my head, pushing me softly down to my knees, telling me, "Child, you'll be forgiven." I hadn't realized at that time what a good friend he was. Quick question, how's my mother? He knew my father had been dead already, and sent me on my way, giving me a double portion. Then all the people were being separated to be shipped out, and there was a question in the German's mind whether I was a girl or a boy. I clung to my mother, and they started to argue between themselves. Jung, Mädchen, Mädchen, Jung. I thought I could solve all my problems by telling them that I was a girl. "Mädchen," I said. And this aroused their suspicion. How could I possibly understand German? I must be Jewish. They pulled us out. They threatened us with a gallows. My mother made up the story that she had been a laundress for the Germans, and I, as a child, had learned a few words. She insisted that if she's to be killed, she does not want to die as a dirty Jew. She convinced them. They let us go. We had no home to go to. Where do we go next? All the women from that area went back to their homes. My mother decided to try to go for the areas where she knew the partisans would probably regroup. We got to another village where we were not known. Our salvation lay in the fact that if we are not known, then they wouldn't know we were Jewish. But my mother knew an awful lot of people, and sure enough, she was recognized. Fortunately, at that point, they weren't quite sure of themselves anymore either. And she was given a piece of bread and sent on her way. We were separated. Had no idea where to look for my mother, nor she where to look for me. I went with a pack of children. There were many homeless children at that point. And I started to inquire. There was a woman looking for a child. Fortunately, I did find her. At that point, the Russians were pushing. They were pushing hard. The Gentiles in the area were already afraid too. What would become of them? They didn't trust the Germans as much, and so they didn't bother us much. We managed to join on
with a group of escaping partisans. The blockade was so bad that the people had been running in all directions like mice. There was one here, one there, everybody trying to pass off as something else. It doesn't take long for one mouse to recognize another. And we regrouped. At that point, we knew that the Russians were pushing. They had occupied Vilna. They were going in our direction. So we pushed toward that direction. And at long last, we rejoined them. They were pushing rather hard. It didn't take them long. And we went along with them, trying, of course, to go back home. Maybe somebody else survived. We went back to Glumboke, the town from where we had escaped from the last ghetto, and stayed there. My mother revisited our home. While we were in the partisans, she saw to it that while there was an attack on our town, that our house be burned down. She wanted no part of it left. I never went back. She didn't want me to go back. No one else survived. No one from our family. It just so happens that the cousin that had taken me out of the ghetto did survive, but he had managed to get out. But he ended up deep in Russia. It wasn't until the Jews were allowed to leave Poland and Russia that he had gotten out and had gone to Israel. He's in Israel now. We had stayed in Glumboke for a little while, but we did not want to remain in Russia or with the Russians. There was also talk that all those who were in the partisans would be drafted and sent to the front lines. My mother managed to sign up with a train that had gone from station to station repairing the water towers. Took a little bribing with some of the goods she had managed to collect from some of the Gentiles where she had stashed it away with. And by buying our way onto that job, we got as far as Prussia, only to get to Prussia and to find out that there was no way of getting across to the Allied side. The battles were fierce. We had met some Jews from the Russian army. We realized that no one wanted to be known as a Jew. Some of them would, in secret, tell us some things. And we were advised ahead for Lublin, where there was a Jewish community. Again, bribed our way, and our boxcar, that was our home for several months, was hooked onto a train heading for Lublin. When we got to Lublin, we found a number of Jews with some sort of organized Jewish community. The Jewish community consisted of a building where most of the Jews had a bed, had some contact with the Haganah, and were fed, I guess, by some organizations that had sent some money over, whether it was through Haganah or otherwise. Everyone was talking about getting to Israel. Some people had already gone. We found that there were certain leaders from Haganah that were taking groups across. The ones that they were interested in taking out first were, of course, the men that could be gotten to Israel and could fight. Women and children were last on the list. we were advised to head south. There was, however, an organization, Jewish organization, that supplied Jews with false passports so that they could travel south, because no one could travel without any papers. We got papers that we were from Greece that would give us the right to go in that general direction. Went to Czechoslovakia first, Hungary, and we were really heading for Romania. But then we found out that that route has been closed off. The only way was to try to cross over to the Allied side. Some people managed to get across from Hungary into Austria. As a matter of fact, during the Austrian during the Hungarian uprising, a certain stream and bridge were in the news where people crossed over to Austria, the same place that we had tried to cross, until the guards caught onto it and sent a few stray bullets in our direction. We tried different routes and finally got across to the edge of Austria that joins into the Alps and through there to Italy. It was a long track. We came to Italy. As we came across those hard mountains, we were met by the Israeli brigade. Oh, what a joyous day. Our own people, we couldn't believe ourselves. They were Jews in uniform, Jews under the Israeli flag. Didn't matter at that time that they weren't really an Israeli army. They were fighting with the British. But to us, it was an Israeli army, and they were Jews. They were very much active in transporting Jews, other Jews to Israel, coming in Jews. But somehow, every attempt we have made sort of blackballed. The truck was to take us to a ship, had broken down, had a flat tire, never made the ship on time. Another time, my mother got sick, never made it. And it became more and more difficult to get across. We came to Italy in early June of 1945. At that time, it wasn't difficult to get out and get across to Israel. But it seemed that with each day, with each passing week, it became harder and harder. We ended up in a displaced person camp in Italy. Quite a number of Jews had gathered there. I guess everybody had the same thing in mind. Those displaced persons camps grew and grew because the exit became harder and harder. Quite a number of ships had ended up in Cyprus. At that point, it was obvious that it wouldn't be easy to get out. My mother had somehow remembered that my father had a sister in Washington, D.C. Fortunately, she remembered the D.C. because it was important. And she had written away, actually not written away, there were some representatives that had advised people if they wanted to find relatives to, they collected information and sent it to the Jewish papers in New York. And my uncle is a good Jew and reads the Jewish paper. And he found our name there. But it was amazing the amount of replies we had, people looking for relatives. Mm. As a matter of fact, there was a family in New York with the last name of Mutter Pearl that tried in the hardest way to find some sort of connection with us. They manufactured purses. And years later, I bought a purse with the name Mutter Pearl in it. It was quite a thrill to have my maiden name in my purse. Yeah. Once we had gotten in contact with my uncle, he had encouraged us to wait for the quota to come to the United States. That was another thing. It was a long wait. But my mother was born in Russia, and the Russian quota had been stuck for so many years, there was no immigration, that a greater number of Jews were allowed on that quota. And on November 14th, 1947, we landed in the United States. It was a thrilling experience. When I came to the United States, I was brought to Washington, D.C. by my uncle and aunt. We were introduced to Rabbi Green, Rabbi Emanuel Green, and my uncle took his advice and sent me to what was the beginning of the Hebrew Academy. It was on Wisconsin and O Street. Even though I was towering over all the children, it probably was the best laid plan because all the children wanted a big girl to answer their questions. I knew a little bit of English when I came here. I went to school in Italy and I had learned some words in English. I had gotten some education in Italy. But I couldn't enter the public schools. Also, I didn't have any papers as to the formal education because the schools were organized amongst the Jews in the displaced person camps. There were plenty of teachers, plenty of professors. I had the best of education there. As a matter of fact, I had a professor from Vilna University. I learned quickly. Children pressed on with questions and I had to answer. Also, my uncle had a grocery store at 301 P Street, Northwest. And I found that if I wanted to make myself helpful, and I had to help out, I had to know what people asked for. At first they would point, then I knew what peas were and beans were and onions and bread and everything else. And by the semester break, which was the end of February, I was accepted into junior high, Langley Junior High School. I found some very understanding teachers, a Mrs. Thomas that was just an angel, and worked with me 1 hour before classes every day, drilling me on sentence structure. Forget your other languages. You may speak Yiddish, you may speak Hebrew, Polish, Russian, but there's nothing like English. She drilled me, and there was Ethel Annett. You must know her too.
I knew her very well.
And she dubbed me Shakespeare in Yiddish. Because I was put in her home room, since she was Jewish. And her Yiddish was limited, but she had a mother, thank God, that knew Yiddish and would run some translations for me. I had a cousin, two cousins here in high school. However, they weren't much of a help. I was a drag. I was the grüne Cousine. And I found after a little while that I could be helpful to my cousin because I had much more math than she ever dreamed of having. And I adapted myself to that part of the studies very quickly. History, again, was a strong subject. I knew my European history quite well. American history was a joy to learn. Except, of course, my English. Why did I kill Shakespeare? My mother couldn't find employment here and decided she would prefer to live in New York. So she went to New York and found a job in a shop. I finished out the year here. Went to summer school to catch up on some of the required studies and then joined her in New York. Had a problem getting into school there. By then, they said, why should I want to continue with school? We lived in a poor area where most kids dropped out at that age. A cousin of mine hit on an idea. She took me to a school in her area, and as I was giving my birth date, I started to say 1930, and she added two. At that point, I knew I was in. I had passed the most important test. And I was accepted to high school. Well, not really high school, it was ninth grade. But in New York, it was in the same building with the high school. The teachers there were marvelous. I think I was the first foreigner to apply to this school. It was a Mr. Berlin. He gave me diction, special diction lessons. There was a Mrs. Klein, head of the Hebrew department, who helped me work out quite a number of problems. I needed a language in order to qualify for college. Hebrew was acceptable in New York. I had no problem taking it for one semester and passing the four-year regents. There was a Dr. Levine that taught history that gave me the idea of taking regent examinations in whatever subject I could possibly take so that I would get the credit. I needed one semester's work and pass a regent examination. I had managed to do that, and within 2.5 years I was on the graduation platform. It was a wonderful experience. It was a Mrs. Reed, guidance counselor, that felt a special obligation because her ancestors were from Germany. She was very proud of her achievement of having gotten me through school. But there was also an English teacher whose name I don't remember and don't care to remember, that fought it out with the principal because she didn't think it was fair to let me double in English. My English was too poor that time, she thought. I had to make a special bargain between the principal, Dr. Abramowitz, and this English teacher, that I'd be allowed to take double English, and the only time I could fit into my schedule was with this one teacher, two classes, Shakespeare and Macbeth at the same time. Oh boy. Managed to pass the regent examination with an 85, gave her no excuse to hold me back. Graduated with honors in my class, qualified for college, which was really more than I had hoped for. My aunt came to my graduation and was very proud, but my cousins were kind of jealous. My aunt came back with all the stories and all the honors afforded me. I got a job in the government, went to school at night. Got a job for the United States District Court. It was a terrific experience. But I couldn't get the job I wanted with the State Department as a translator. I had gotten an interview because someone that my uncle knew somebody there. And when I made out the application, they realized I wasn't a citizen, didn't qualify for civil service employment. It was a great shock to me. I got an appointment at the district court. I was the youngest employee there. As a matter of fact, Judge Holsov, Judge Lowe, and Chief Justice Lowe, and Judge Schweinhaupt were my sponsors. I worked there for a number of years. It's wonderful to live in this country. All I can say is, I hope my children don't have to go through what I